Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Welcome to Wednesday on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, serving the region with honestly provocative talk radio. I thought I'd start out with a crazy idea out of Seattle. Now, Seattle does not have a monopoly on all the crazy ideas in the Northwest. I mean, after all, Oregon is proposing to toll the freeways so that they catch people from out of state and charge them a fee and then spend all the money on the south side of the Columbia River. But in Seattle, they're doing something that I think people ought to find very, very offensive, and that is they don't want to toll the freeways, not just yet. They want to toll the streets. The streets, to just drive on the streets of your city. Now, one of the concerns I have is that when a city like Seattle decides to do something cockamamie like this, because the government says we need more money, we got to pry more of your money loose. I mean, I swear that people like Jenny Durkin and Jay Inslee want to take the average taxpayer and hold them upside down and shake them real hard to see how much change they can knock out of their pockets. So here's what they're talking about now. Seattle is developing a plan to toll city roadways as part of its efforts to reduce traffic congestion and greenhouse gas emissions. This is what Mayor Jenny Durkin announced yesterday. And I swear, the local Daily Dead Fish rapper, the Seattle Times in this case, they always write it in the most charitable, sympathetic way. Oh, she's just trying to do this to help you out with traffic congestion and greenhouse gases. She's trying to make the planet heal itself the way Barack Obama said it was going to be healed by his election. No, they're doing it because they want to put a whole big pile of money in their pockets. And you know who they're going to spend most of the money on? They're going to spend most of the money on rich people, and I'll make that case for you. But here's what they plan to do first. This is the part I think the average person who drives a car and the average person who commutes in the bigger cities of the Northwest gets there by car. Of course, in the smaller cities of the Northwest, almost everybody goes by car because transit does not work to serve more than about 5 or 6% of the population. So you have multi-billion dollar programs of transit that only serve 5% of the population. And you have similar amounts spent on roadways that serve the other 95%. If that sounds like a fair split to you, I'd like to take a look at the math you used to get to that result. But here's what they want to do. They want to put tolls on city roadways. So in other words, if you drive into a certain area, they call it cordon tolling, as in putting a cordon around an area. They say if you drive into this area, you are going to be nicked for some kind of toll. And if you wonder, well, how are they going to know that? Look, the tools are already out there for them to perpetrate this scam on the public. The tools are cameras and sensors. So they can say to you, if you decide to drive into a certain area of town, there's going to be a camera on the corner. It'll probably also be writing speed tickets and red light tickets and all the other things that generate lots of money but don't necessarily make the roadways any safer. Oh, and by the way, if you drive into that part of town, you're going to have to pay a toll. Now, they don't know exactly what they're going to do, what areas they're going to do. They won't tell you any of this. This is kind of a trial balloon. But let me give you an example that I'm aware of because I read about it a few years ago. The city of Hong Kong, which is one of those densely packed places on Earth outside the Gaza Strip, the city of Hong Kong finally decided our streets are too crowded. It costs north of $10 each time you drive a car into the city. $10. So if you're a worker and you drive a car, and there aren't a whole lot of workers who are going to drive cars under those circumstances, every month that you work 22 days, which is the average work days in a month, you're going to have to shell out $220. Now, I don't know if Seattle's toll is going to be that high. They'll probably start it low, because they'll want you to get used to it. And then when it goes up by a nickel or a quarter or 50 cents, then you'll say, well, it's not that big a deal. It's just a small increase. Look, the minute you open the door to this kind of stuff, just expect that they're going to tax the daylights out of you as soon as they can. And that's what they plan to do. Now, what are they going to spend the money on? Here's where it really gets dirty. They say we'll spend the money on transit. Well, the amount of money you're going to generate when you talk about the multi-billion dollar transit agencies of the Northwest. A bus costs north of $500,000. If it's a hybrid bus, it can cost north of $750,000. So unless you generate gigantic amounts of money from the tolls, it isn't going to make a big difference to transit. But here's what Durkin also says she's going to spend it on, because she's actually named the two specific places she plans to spend the money. One is transit, which is a giant black hole, because transit agencies routinely lose and lose and lose. And then they turn to the taxpayers and the federal government and they say, you got to make up the difference because we're serving 5% of the population. Well, bully for you. She also plans to spend it on what they call electric car infrastructure, which is fancy government talk for electric car chargers. Now, I understand if you're, you're one of these global warming true believers, you say, well, we should do that. Well, two objections to that. Number one, most of the electric cars are charged with electricity. Some of it is made with hydro. Some of it is made with natural gas. Some is even made with nuclear. But some of it, a sizable percentage of it, is made with coal. So in other words, you're going to make the planet greener by having an electric car running along happily on his little electric charge from this car charger that was paid for by everybody else. But the coal that was burned over in Montana or Wyoming to charge that car, why, we've just moved that pollution a couple of states over. If you really think that that's going to make a net difference to the environment, explain to me how moving the burning of gasoline or diesel to burning of coal two states over makes a net difference for planet Earth. I'd love to talk to a greenie about that. But here's my final objection, and that is you're going to charge an awful lot of average folks who have to drive cars. If you're an office worker, you may be able to take transit. But if you're somebody who works in any of the service trades, if you're in construction, if you're in remodeling, if you're a plumber or an electrician or any of those trades, you have to drive a vehicle. And every time you drive into this city tolling street area, you're going to get nicked again. And who are you buying electric cars for? Well, they did a study a while back, and they looked at where the electric car registrations came back to. In Washington state, a majority of them come back to the richest neighborhoods in the state. In other words, they're rich people who are buying a third or fourth or fifth car. It goes along with their other cars that I have no doubt run on gasoline and diesel, but they buy the electric car and then they can show off to their friends. Look how environmentally sensitive we're being. Well, I think that's a bunch of hogwash. And the idea that you're going to pry money mostly out of the pockets of average folks to use it to subsidize the charging of already subsidized electric cars mostly owned by the rich, that one seems especially tragic. We'll get your phone calls and your emails too. We got a lot to talk about today. And by the way, one thing we're doing, your donations saving lives today by helping to cure children of parasites is a great cause. We've done it before. You're helping to relieve a child of pain and prevent deadly disease. For more information about World Concern and to make your donation and make a difference, call 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. It's a cause that I've gotten behind. It's they get the money to where it makes the biggest difference. And there are literally millions of kids on planet Earth that suffer from these parasites. They can be cured with a pill that costs 44 cents, but the money has to come from somewhere. We'll get to your calls and your emails, but let's start with the nonsense.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Almost 2 months ago, America found out that the slogan, if you see something, say something, needed the words, we won't do nothing about it, based on the murders in Parkland, Florida. Yesterday, in San Bruno, California, at the headquarters of YouTube, we saw more evidence. A crazy woman whose family said she was angry at YouTube for censoring her videos turned up in that town after being reported missing. The police called her family 12 hours before the shooting and told her brother where they'd found her. He warned them that given that she was in that neighborhood, not hours away where she lived, she was angry with the internet company YouTube and she might do something rash. Police promised to keep an eye on her. 12 hours later, she entered the building and shot three people before this animal rights advocate ate the gun herself. One of the witnesses at the scene told a Fox News reporter what he saw and then offered up, quote, I wish I'd had a gun to protect himself. He didn't because California has some of the most ridiculously tough gun laws in America. And of course, the YouTube campus was a gun-free zone, making it one of the most dangerous places where mass shootings happen 98% of the time. And now today's grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, granite, topsoil, or sand. Let Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks put it where you want it.
Well, Oregon has joined all those other states that are filing lawsuits over the census question, are you a citizen, which I think is one of the most sensible questions to ask in the census. If you're going to do more than a head count and ask about people's toilets and how they get to work, you certainly should be asking how many of you are citizens and how many of you are here under some other circumstances. Nothing wrong with that. Oregon is being crazy to join this lawsuit and spend citizens' money fighting something that is perfectly sensible. Greg Dawson writes in with today's best email, but you can send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Lars, I'm a little spun up today. Ockley Green middle school teacher Chris Reiser at the very least needs to be fired, and I'm not sure that some jail time isn't warranted. He led students on an unscheduled, unauthorized march and had them lay down in a die-in in the middle of MLK Boulevard during school time when we taxpayers are paying to have these kids in school. Because it was unauthorized by the district, teachers or parents, and in spite of the children's willingness to go along, his actions may border on kidnapping. Further, the march was to protest the shooting of yet another black citizen with a fairly impressive criminal record who could not obey police commands. The shoot was determined to be justified. What message does it send to middle school children when an authority figure organizes a group of several hundred kids to protest the police doing their jobs that they are supposed to do? Signed, Greg Dawson. Send those emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I could come up with more of a raft of reasons not to go for this city tolling of streets. In other words, you, the citizens, have paid for these streets, and now the city is going to charge you a second time to actually use them. It's like buying a house, and when you're done paying for it, being told you have to rent it back if you want to actually use it. They say details, this is from the Fish Wrapper, details of what such a plan might look like are sparse and will hinge on a tolling study focused on neighborhoods that should have initial results later this year. While several foreign cities, I mentioned Hong Kong, use broad congestion pricing schemes to reduce car travel, no American city has established a similar widespread tolling system. There's a reason for that. It's a stupid idea. Can you imagine? Do you want your city to be the first stupid city to sign on for this kind of nonsense? And we've invited Mayor Durkin on before. I'd love to have her come on and ask her that question. So what do you think about this? Is there a good reason to do this? And when they promise this will reduce congestion, do you know the only way that tolling downtown streets reduces congestion? If you force some people not to drive into your city. Now, most cities work very hard to say, come to our city. It's beautiful. It's picturesque. There's a lot of business opportunities. There are a lot of fun things to do. Oh, and by the way, we're going to tax the daylights out of you when you arrive at this intersection. As soon as you drive across into it, it's $5 or whatever they decide it's going to be. You notice they don't talk at all about how much each toll is going to be. And they know where this is going to hit for a supposedly progressive city. And watch Portland follow their lead, too, and Eugene and Spokane as well. They'll say, well, we have to do this. It's progressive. These taxes hit the poor a whole lot and the average working class person a whole lot harder than they do the wealthy. Let's go to Mike. Mike, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on Wednesday. What's on your mind?
Well, I was having such a beautiful day driving around in Bend out on the roads, and I heard this thing about Seattle because I go to Seattle quite often.
Uh-huh.
But my question was, let's peek behind the curtain and see who's going to be excluded from being tolled. Naturally, you're fired, your police department. Well, now they're going to come out and they're going to say, well, we can't toll city employees who drive their cars, and we can't toll taxi cabs because they're getting people around. So it's going to come down to the schmuck who's the guy who's trying to make a living and who's got a gas-guzzling car, who's going to pick up the major bulk of all these toll taxes.
Yep.
And I think what they're doing is they're actually shooting themselves in the foot because they've already got it on the highways up there right now, which is their e-pass. And I do that every once in a while when I'm up there. But after a while, I've watched it go from 25 cents now to...
You dropped out on me for a second there, Mike. Are you still there? So you probably hit a toll. They've now decided that they're going to toll cell phone use, you know, while driving. Sorry about that, Matt. Mike, you dropped out for a second.
Oh, sorry, but yeah, I am driving.
Well, but that's you've raised another objection. Can you imagine the list? You know that I think they still do this. There was a time where they exempted diesel and gasoline taxes when it came to recycling folks. They said, well, we want recycling, so we're going to exempt them from a certain amount of state or federal fuel taxes. You can imagine the same list, as you say. They'll exempt police and fire. That kind of makes sense. That would be stupid to charge on police and fire units. But then they'll say, well, should charitable groups have to pay that on their vehicles? We'll exempt them. Should, and they will go right down a long list of people who get exempted. And the only folks who are still standing when the music stops in musical chairs, they're the ones who pay the bill.
Exactly. No, it's crazy. But have a nice day.
Hey, thanks very much. And wait till it comes to Ben, because I know Ben will say, well, we have all those curb cuts that we have to repair, $38 million worth. Where are we going to get the money? Well, if Seattle can do that tolling. And remember, one of the things that makes it easier for cities to pull this kind of nonsense is technology. I mean, if you went back 30, 40 years and said, we're going to put a camera on the corner that'll shoot both stills and video, it'll gather data, license plate data, which is they'd have to do in this case, it would have been hugely expensive. These days, cameras, internet connections, all that is so dirt cheap that cities and counties and states, and probably the federal government too, are going to come up with every excuse they can. Why? We can tag you for a red light runner without having to employ a cop. We can tag you for speed without having to employ a cop. We can charge you a toll by putting a camera up. They do that on the 520 bridge right now. And Portland is talking about putting tolls on the freeways. By the way, they need the permission of the federal government to do it. And I would hope that the Trump administration would tell them no. You are not allowed to tell people that they have to pay for the freeway and then pay an extra toll to drive on the freeway in a car that is powered by gasoline or diesel that has taxes on it. So how many different ways are you going to pay for the ability to go out and drive on the roads? As many ways as they can come up with, it sounds like, is the sensible answer to that. And this is something citizens should stand up and say no to. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Should be interesting to find out how the governors react to this one. It just came out from the White House that Donald Trump's announcement yesterday put troops on the border. It will be National Guard troops, as some of us suspected it would be. And imagine what's going to happen when Governor Moonbeam in California and Katie, I can't make a decision on the billion-dollar tax hide Brown of Oregon, and Jay, I love every tax I've ever seen. And twice on Sunday, Jay Inslee decide to say, when the federal government federalizes their National Guard, what are they going to try to do in the way of roadblocks to keep those troops from being sent to the border? Because after all, those three states and a lot more are sanctuary states. And boy, what are the governors going to say? What's Katie Brown going to say when reporters walk up to her and say, Governor, what do you think of the fact that we're going to send Oregon National Guard or Washington National Guard, in the case of Inslee, down to the border to keep those illegal aliens out of America? She can make a lot of noise, but I'm not sure she can stop it once they've federalized those troops. I've also brought to you a lot of concerns about the fact that we don't seem to put people in prison or jail for serious crimes much anymore. 75% of convicted felons in the state of Oregon do not see a single day of prison time. But the problem begins long before that. It begins in jails, which are deliberately undersized. And lately, they've been letting a lot of people go from jail because they say, we don't have any room. On the other hand, they say, but we don't want to have any more jails to have more room. Heck, they've got the current most recent jail, Wapato Jail, built a decade ago, has never, ever been used. And in fact, it's on the block right now. They're trying to sell it or turn it into something else. Katie Shepard joins me now, who's a reporter for Willamette Week, with a story about how apparently when they decide we're full and we don't have any more room at the inn or the Gray Bar Hotel, that they turn loose the worst folks instead of the folks who are lower level. Katie, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell me about this. The computers are actually making the decisions and telling jail deputies to let people go, even some who are charged with murder?
Yeah, so there's a computer system that analyzes a number of factors, including what your charge is, how serious the charge is, how many other charges you have right now, how many you've had in the past, whether you have any past convictions. And it goes through this calculation and spits out a list after about 6 hours of running the program.
Six hours? Are they using steam-powered computers or what?
I think that it just takes a long time to make the calculation because there are so many factors in the matrix, which is what the computer program is referred to. It's called a matrix. And
even the movie The Matrix only lasted 2 hours. How does it take 6 hours for a computer to spit out a decision? You could calculate the trip to Mars in that time, couldn't you?
Well, it's looking back through 10 years of criminal history for around 1,200 inmates in the Multnomah County jails. So that's a lot of criminal history for a lot of people.
Yeah. And so what they do is literally on one Sunday last month, you write, a computer told Multnomah County deputies to let a man charged with murder go free. Do you think the computer said, well, he's only charged with murder once and he doesn't have any other priors, so we'll let him go? It sounds like it's that dumb. They can't believe that this is a good program.
It seems like that is basically what happened, and a lot of people in the county are concerned with the fact that the computer suggested letting a murderer go. And they're trying to change it, but there's a little bit of disagreement among county officials as to what the best approach is.
What's the disagreement? I mean, anything's got to be better than this. Letting the deputies who are trained law enforcement people make the decision sounds like better than turning it over to HAL 9000.
Well, that's definitely an option that they have. They could revisit the rules that the county laid out for the sheriff's office and give deputies more discretion in cases where somebody with very serious charges is put on the list. They could reevaluate the factors that the computer is taking into account so that it weights scores differently to ensure that people with Measure 11 charges, violent crimes, and things like murder can't be eligible for release, basically. Or they could take another approach, which is to reopen some of the closed jail dorms and just expand the number of jail beds available, which would probably reduce the use of the matrix or completely eliminate it. In the past, before the dorms were closed, the sheriff's office hadn't used this matrix system in a couple of years.
And in fact, you mentioned something interesting that I think a lot of people may not be aware of. They have entirely empty jail dormitories that could be opened up simply by inserting new corrections deputies in there, right?
Yeah, they have a few dorms that are closed that have the beds available. If they flipped the lights on and staffed the dorms, then people could be put into those jail beds that are there, which there are a few hundred open jail beds that they potentially could use. But it is really expensive to fund that and hire deputies to patrol those units. And it would add a lot of cost. I think the estimate is about $3,600 a day per dorm.
And how many people in a dorm? Do you remember?
It's a little over 150.
That seems like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? That's like, what is it? Well, $10, $1,500. So we're talking about $20 a day to open up per inmate.
It depends on what your priorities are, I think. But
my priority is keeping murderers off the street. I think the sheriff's department still shares that, unless it's an illegal alien, in which case they get a free bus trip somewhere.
I think you're right that everybody is in agreement that we shouldn't be letting murderers or accused murderers out of jail before they have their trial and before they're either acquitted or convicted. Everybody that I talked to was on the same page that this result that happened a couple of weeks ago should have never happened, and that they want to avoid that happening again in the future. However, is the best approach to do that. But the county's view is that in the past, the Multnomah County has depended on jail beds too much and that we don't need as many as we have.
Hold on. Dependent on... Stop, Katie. I'm talking to Katie Shepherd, who's a reporter for Lion Week. You can find her whole story at WWeek.com without my editorial interjections. But, Katie, you're saying that it's... That they're questioning whether or not there's another alternative, like a community alternative for accused murderers or accused rapists or accused people or accused of assault. What is the community alternative to locking up serious violent criminals?
It's a little bit more complicated than that, because while the computer is suggesting people with very serious charges to be released, there are plenty of people who are being held who are not being considered by the computer on much less serious charges, things like shoplifting, relatively minor crimes.
Katie, did they have the same people work on this computer program who worked on that big Obamacare website that worked out so well?
I don't know.
Yeah, probably they did. It was government in connection with computers always equals train wreck. Well, in this case, they think they can fix this, but in the meantime, they're still taking advice from Skynet, telling them to do dangerous... I always thought that was science fiction, that human beings would ever take orders from a computer to do dangerous, stupid things. But apparently, we have it happening right here in the Northwest.
Yeah, the sheriff's office says that they cannot deviate from what the list says.
What? Hold on. Oh, the sheriff is now taking orders from a computer, and he says, I don't have any choice but to take orders from the computer? We got to get Mike Reese on to answer that one.
That's what the sheriff's office says. But obviously, they kind of did go against what the computer said when they didn't let this man who is charged with murder out. Instead, what they did was they temporarily opened one of the closed dorms and filed people into those empty beds for a 48-hour period until the jail population fell below the 95%.
Well, Katie, I think we ought to be given props and kudos to the courage of an elected sheriff who is elected by the voters to actually override the computer that's telling him to do something stupid. Imagine the courage it takes for a sheriff to say no to a computer and actually do his job. I mean, heck, maybe that was a problem in Broward County. They said, we would have gone in, but the computer told us to stay outside.
I think that it's a really complicated issue, and I think everybody here in Multnomah County definitely agrees that this computer system that's being used right now needs to be revisited.
Will the computer be running against Reese in the next election?
It has not filed to run yet.
If it does, I'm going to give it free time. I'm going to let it come on the show and talk about how it does a better job than Mike Reese does as sheriff.
Well, then you can hold it to account for suggesting letting this young man who is charged with murder go, or suggesting that he should be let go.
I think that's a good idea. Katie, you're the best. Thank you very much. You can read her whole story at WWeek.com. She is Katie Shepherd from Willamette Week, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. By the way, I mentioned it in the commentary. Mountain View police found Nasim Agdam sleeping in her car hours before she invaded the YouTube headquarters. 1,700 people on that campus. She shot three of them before turning the gun on herself. The police had her. They found her sleeping in the car, called her family, said, "We found her." Her family said, if she's in Mountain View, it may be because she has a bone to pick with YouTube and she might do something extreme. Apparently nothing much more was done, and the police said, "We'll keep an eye on her." And they had an eye on her about 12 hours later, when she tried to murder people. Let's go to naysayer Wade. Wade, thanks for listening, and I'm glad to have your call today. What do you and I disagree about today?
Well, Lars, I think they should toll the roads.
Why?
I think that they should toll the roads to make it even for everybody. You know, we got all these bicyclists out here using the roads, don't pay a dime. Put a tag on their little bikes and charge them every time they go through an intersection.
Well, you know they're going to be the first ones that get exempted from this, right?
Yeah, well, like I said, that's what my point is. We should charge everybody equally is my point here, and that's probably the easiest. Other than this device they want to put on your car, check in your mileage. What does that do for the bikes, you know? So
the vehicle miles traveled nonsense?
Yeah, so at some point with more and more electric vehicles, they're going to have to come to a different taxing way that they're doing it rather than gasoline taxing.
Wade, I got to tell you something. That is a bunch of hooey, and I'm not criticizing you. I'm criticizing the state agencies that say, why with all these electric vehicles, there's no way we collect as much gas tax. Let me try some numbers on you, because I've always liked numbers. I don't think I could have got a math degree in college, but I love numbers. How many cars in the United States of America? I know the number. It's just north of 250 million cars. How many electric cars are there? Less than 1 million. So even today, we're talking about cars being less than 1/250th of the vehicle fleet. So when people say, well, and then you call the agencies and you say, you say you're collecting less in gas taxes because cars are so efficient these days, and we're practically every other car is an electric car, even though the numbers don't back that up. And they say, well, yeah, we are collecting less. And then you say, give me the historic numbers. And you know what? I did this 2 years ago. And it turns out I called them back and said, it shows that your gas tax revenues are up 3 or 4% a year. And they said, yeah, but we're used to 7 or 8% a year. And I said, so the numbers aren't going down. No. They're not. We're just collecting less than we would have expected if we'd stayed all gasoline or all diesel. And you say, but you're telling the public you're collecting less in gas taxes. From their point of view, it's like a guy who tells his boss, I expect a 10% raise every year. If you only give me an 8% raise every year, I'm going to go home and tell my family that you cut my wages. Now, I guess from one perspective, if you expect 10% and you only get 8, that is a cut. But that only works in the government's math and their crazy, fevered brain that thinks anytime they don't get as much money as they expected to get, then it's a cut. They're actually lying when they say that they're collecting less in gas tax revenue. And they say, but our expenses are up. We got these PERS pensions to fund. We have all these expensive public salaries that we have to fund. You have to, the rest of you grow at 2 or 3% a year. We need to grow at least double that. And if we don't get enough money to grow at double the rate of the people who actually are paying the bill, can you imagine anybody else in the private sector who works that way saying, my clients, you run a movie theater and your clients' wages, the people who come to the movie theater to watch the movies, their wages go up 2% a year. But last year, movie theaters charged 4% more. Well, I think that's kind of foolish to say the folks who use our product have seen their wages go up this much, but we want twice as much. Government does that all day long, and it drives me crazy. Let's go to Tanya in Granite Falls. Hey, Tanya, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. So I was thinking that if they're going to toll the roads, they already charge for parking in every one of their hospitals except for the VA. But if they toll the roads, then all those people who are coming into Seattle for treatments for cancer and whatnot, then they're going to have to not only pay for parking, but then they have to pay for the toll roads. They have to pay taxes extreme taxes on a room if they have to stay overnight. I mean, it's crazy.
I agree. And it. And
I mean, when does it stop for the patient?
I guess, when does it stop for any of us? It stops when the government decides they have enough. Have you ever known, at least in the Northwest, a government agency that said, gosh, we have more funding than we know what to do with right now. We've got enough. Don't pay us anymore. Can you imagine that ever happening?
No, and I have a brother that lives in North Carolina, and his car tabs every year are $21.
And that's what they ought to be in Washington State. Tanya, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. By the way, your donations to World Concern to help save kids and cure them of parasites, it's a 44-cent pill. Call them now, 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with y'all. Get back to your phone calls shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's actually hard for me to remember the first time I ever heard somebody say it, or the first time I said, why don't we put the troops on the border? Well, yesterday, the President of the United States said, we are going to put troops on our southern border to make sure that people can't come into our country illegally. And we're going to do that because the Congress won't allocate the money to build the wall. So until the wall comes, we'll put troops on the border. And we didn't have a lot of details. Well, today we got some of the details from the new head of Homeland Security. She came out and announced today it will be the National Guard. And I thought we'd talk to Dr. Sebastian Gorka about that first. He is National Security Strategist for Fox News, a contributor to The Hill, and former advisor to President Donald Trump, and, of course, the best-selling author of Defeating Jihad. Dr. Gorka, welcome back to the program. And what do you think? This sounds like a bang-up idea to guard our southern border.
I say it before, and I say it again, Lars, you understand that we could be the next Secretary of Homeland Security. it's revenge of common sense. I mean, really, how obvious is this? The swamp failed again and again and again to appropriate the requisite funds. President Bush, President Obama has deployed our military across the border previously. Ike did it in 57 to reintegrate the schools in Arkansas with the 101st Airborne. The founding fathers designed a genius system whereby federal government was meant as irrelevant as possible. It was about states' rights. But the one massive exception was, of course, national security and foreign relations. And this is a national security issue. I'm in the swamp right now. I'm just outside D.C. Last week, we had six members of MS-13 charged in Maryland, right here, a few miles from where I'm speaking to you. Not in Arizona, not on the border in Texas, in Maryland. Five of them were here illegally. So it's a no-brainer, Lars. And finally, we have a president who's got to take action.
The only thing I wonder about, Dr. Gorka, is as common sense as it is, since it is common sense, we can fully expect the liberals, and in this case that means Democrats, to say, what way can we gum it up? I mean, the census can't even ask the question, are you in the country as a citizen or not, which would apply right to both the illegals and green card holders, because the 30 states go out and file lawsuits, say, no, you can't. What do you think we can expect from states like California, Oregon, Washington, and the other liberal states down the East Coast who are not going to like the idea of their National Guard being federalized and then sent to the border?
Well, it's actually interesting, given that there's really very little love for our military on the left side of the political spectrum, the lack of response in the last 2 days on this issue is very unusual. Usually, you'll have the liberals, preaching that, here comes the dictatorship and jackboots are going to be marching down the highways. But they haven't done it. So I think maybe the president's caught them short. Maybe they'll wake up in the next 24, 48 hours. And they'll try. They'll be activist judges. They'll be, the move-on type Soros-funded organizations that will try to mobilize protest against it. But at the end of the day, the Constitution is very, very clear. The president has a unique authority in terms of national security, and on top of that, he has the exclusive authority when it comes to deciding who comes into this country. That is a function of the executive and the commander-in-chief. So at the end of the day, they don't have a legal leg to stand on.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, I imagine that when they call up Texas and say, you want to put your National Guard on the border, Texas will probably jump right up and get it done.
Right.
But I'm wondering what happens when Governor Moonbeam in Sacramento gets the request.
Yeah, look, we like to talk about the People's Republic of California. And it's funny, I get it. But it's not a homogenous state. There are decent patriots. There are people in California who see the cost their nation has paid because of how porous our southern border is. So, Moonbeam is Moonbeam. He's on the side of the bad guys. But eventually, there's a political cost that even individuals like the governor of California have to pay.
I'm talking to Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who's a national security strategist for Fox News and the best-selling author of Defeating Jihad. Let's talk about what's being characterized as a trade war by the media and maybe even by Wall Street. Is it a trade war? And if so, is that necessarily a bad thing?
It's not a trade war yet. And if it ever develops into a trade war, China will lose that war. What we have is what I wrote a piece in The Hill on this right after the president announced the steel and aluminum tariffs. This isn't about trade wars, and it's not even about steel and aluminum. It's about a global reset, and I don't mean that dinky plastic button that Hillary took to the Kremlin. I'm talking about a true reset. The president of the United States is a pragmatist. He knows how much a dollar is worth. He knows how much unlevel the playing field is. And he's resetting relations with all nations around the world. And he's saying, yes, we believe in free trade, but we believe in fair trade. And if you're China or anybody else, it's not going to continue as it has for the last 30 years. So don't worry about it. The market will readjust. It's about American jobs. It's about American interests.
Couldn't agree with you more. And I mean, I guess one of the things I've heard, I didn't have any reason prior to this to look into how many tons of soybeans China uses, but apparently one of the main ways that China feeds its massive population, what, close to 1.5 billion people, is they feed livestock, pigs and other animals. They feed them soybeans and other meal.
Yes.
And apparently the United States is the single country that has enough soybeans to actually satisfy China's need. So if China says, we're going to slap a tariff on soybeans, then the only people that suffer are their population. If the soybeans aren't brought into China, then China can't feed its population.
You've hit on an incredibly important issue. Every nation has a unique strategic culture, and China's has been shaped for the last 4,000 years by one massive fear and one vulnerability above all else. Since the period of the Warring States, the Han Chinese, the elite Chinese that are now the Communist Party, Politburo, including Xi Jinping, they are obsessed and afraid of the collapse of China internally, the internal fracturing. And one of the most obvious ways for that to be precipitated is if you have tens of millions or hundreds of millions of Chinese who go hungry. So, yes, there, you know, China has much, much more to lose than we do in any potential trade war.
Yeah, and of course, to keep all those factories running, churning out all those consumer goods, they have to have a place to sell them. And as far as I can tell, the United States is the single most attractive market to sell all that stuff in. I mean, otherwise, what would Target and all those other stores fill their shelves with, if not with Chinese goods?
Funny how that works. You know, it works both ways, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Dr. Gorka, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. That's Dr. Sebastian Gorka. Sorry about that. I was a little fast on the button. He is the author of Defeating Jihad and former advisor to President Trump. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Well, we've got a lot of things on the agenda today. Number one, the city of Seattle's plan to start tolling neighborhood streets. Jenny Durkin, the mayor of Seattle, and I'd love to get her on the show. You hear that, Carl? I'd love to get Mayor Jenny Durkin on the show. I want to get Mayor Durkin on so we can ask her, how does it make sense to tell people to buy the streets and pay for them and then pay for the maintenance? Oh, and then, by the way, if you want to actually use that street, you have to rent it back from Jenny Durkin. And they're going to take the money and spend it on expensive electric cars. Now, no matter what else you hear about them, I got a nice little email from Bert Hotchkiss, who says, Lars, I'm one of those rich folks that drives a subsidized Tesla using electricity generated with coal in Montana. It uses 3.5 cents of electricity per mile at 60 miles an hour. Compare that to a gas guzzler that uses 10 cents per mile of gas. Actually, that's not a gas guzzler. If you do the math, you're only getting 30 miles to the gallon. I don't think 30 miles to the gallon is a gas guzzler. 10 miles to the gallon is a gas guzzler. He says, by the way, your wife used to buy holly from us at Christmas time. Here's the comparison that I throw back at him. I say, you've got that cute Tesla for which you got several thousand dollars in tax subsidy from the rest of us who don't drive the electric car. The car itself has a higher capital cost. That is, if you walked into a car dealership and said, I'd like to see an electric Tesla that gets 3.5 pennies of electricity per mile, or uses that much per mile, and I'd like to see the comparable gasoline or diesel-powered car, and then look at the capital costs of the two automobiles. Don't even bother factoring in the tax subsidy coming from the rest of us and whether or not that's moral and ethical to do. Just look at the cost of the cars. yes, your car has lower operating costs and it has a much higher capital cost. And when you pencil the two together, do they pencil out? The answer is no, which is why the government still subsidizes them. If something actually pencils out, if electric cars had a lower capital cost or the same capital cost as gasoline cars and one-third the fuel cost, why, you wouldn't be able to sell a gasoline car and people would be buying nothing but electric cars. The fact is, that isn't the way that it pencils out. So as far as I'm concerned, if you want to have the electric car, you ought to pay for it, just like those of us who want to have gasoline or diesel cars pay for it. And then you should pay for your electricity. You shouldn't get any free car charging stations, just like I don't get a free gasoline or diesel station. To your calls now at 866-439-5277. It is the best conversation in talk journalism right here on the Radio Northwest Network, covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Eric, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was just thinking about that tax, fuel tax.
Yes. And then his phone quit. Boy, I wish I'd heard more of that. But, okay, how about Robert? Robert, you say you have a better idea than President Trump's idea to put the National Guard on the border to make sure that people don't illegally come into our country. What's the better idea?
Well, I think since each state has its own reserve, why don't we have each state do their summer week or two encampment down on the border? We have 50 states. There's 52 weeks. We only got a couple weeks to make up. It's a lot easier to make up a little bit than a lot. And there's so many people complaining about the fact that we're using National Guards for something like the border, which we need. I think it's a win-win myself.
Can I ask you a question? And I'll plead ignorance here. I don't know for a fact, but I suspect that is the Air Force Reserve part of the Air Force, so it's a federal agency. Am I wrong about that, or is the Air Force or Army Reserve, is that a state agency or a state?
I couldn't answer you for sure on that. I know we do have an Oregon National Guard.
Well, no,
I don't
Oregon,
know for sure if that's...
Yeah, Oregon National Guard is National Guard. There is also the Reserve, but no, there's no state guard. There is the Oregon National Guard, which is a state agency until it's federalized. So what happens is the Oregon National Guard is under the governor, under the control of Governor Kate Brown. And that's a frightening idea by itself. And the Washington National Guard is, can you imagine her? And she can't make a decision. You know, she still hasn't decided whether to sign the $1 billion tax increase on small business or to veto it. And apparently both options are equally open to her. Can you imagine having Lieutenant Kate Brown in charge of even a small number of service? And they're going down the path somewhere, and all the service, all the soldiers or Marines under her command, they come to a fork in the road and they say, well, Lieutenant Brown, which way should she go? And 2 months from now, she's still standing there at that fork in the road with all those service members piled up behind her going, hey, Lieutenant, you got the map. Where are we going? She doesn't know where she's going. So, and then you've got Jay Inslee. Imagine Lieutenant Jay Inslee in charge of some military. Anyway, I think the reserve is part of the Air Force Reserve is part of the United States Air Force, which is federal, which means it's not under state control. If I'm wrong about that, I'm happy to be corrected. But on the National Guard side, here's the problem with your suggestion that I see, and you tell me if I'm wrong. If you ask Kate Brown, governor of Oregon, Governor Brown, we'd like to send some of your state National Guard down to the California border to keep the illegal aliens out, is she going to say yes or no?
She's going to say no, but the thing is, each particular reserve group, I know they have to do a 2-week stand in the summertime. And they're always looking for a place to go that's better weather.
Well,
that's pretty much better weather year-round down there.
It is, but as long as they're under state control, the governors of Oregon, Washington, California, and most of the liberal East Coast states are all going to say, no, we're not sending them. But if the president federalizes the National Guard, which is what you do when they're called up by the federal government, oftentimes to overseas and fight in places like Iraq and Afghanistan— the president, and that's exactly what Trump is doing. If he made this a state thing, there are a bunch of states, the most populous states, that would just say, no, we're not doing it, just like they're saying no to everything else in the way of helping to enforce federal immigration laws. So that's the problem I see with having the states do it, is that a lot of the states are run by nitwits who don't have any interest in enforcing the law. Let's go to John in Camas, Washington. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you, Lars. You've teed up a great one on the tolling issue today.
I do what I can. What's your thought on it?
Well, of course, I hate the concept, number one. Number two, wanted to pass along that Maria Frost of the Washington Policy Center recently teed up the fact that on I-405 in Seattle, up to 40% of the tolls they collect go to the vendor for the cost of just collecting the tolls.
Wow.
And of course, that's absolutely outrageous.
Maria's the best, by the way.
Yes, she is. Does an amazing job. In the Portland area, of course, our biggest problem is that they've had 35 years of refusing to add vehicle capacity.
Yep.
And this tolling committee recently rejected the very common sense idea of I-205 and then tolling only that new addition of capacity. And unbelievably, they never even voted on removing that from the package. The staff recommended what's going to go forward and what's going to be cut, and the 25-member advisory board never even voted on it. At the end of the February meeting, the staff was saying, hey, we never discussed or voted. Is this okay? Half the members of that tolling board had already gotten up from their tables, were walking out of the room. The meeting was over. They never even said yes or no to what goes forward or what not.
Imagine that, John. They've actually done in plain view what I've always said they've done. They hold public hearings. They hold, they do all this razzmatazz, all this window dressing. And then they say, now we're going to go ahead and do what we planned to do originally. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you. By the way, we're helping out with World Health Week. Your donations are saving lives today by helping cure children of parasites and disease. These are nasty little parasites. They get them from the water. It's not their fault. They live in a lousy part of the world, and the water is dirty, and they get sick from this stuff, and it causes an incredible amount of pain. For $44 donated, 100 kids are cured. Do the math. It's about 44 cents for every pill. We'd like you to donate to World Concern, and it goes directly to a good cause, and the money actually makes a difference. 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. Glad to have you with me on the Radio Northwest Network, and glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. James Buechel joins me now because he heads the GOP, the Multnomah County GOP, and you have accused Portland Public Schools of brainwashing kids. James, welcome to the program, and tell us what you mean.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the schools are feeding impressionable young children significant misinformation about guns and the risks that they face. We have parents now sending us pictures on the walls saying, twice as many children die of gun violence as of cancer, which is completely false. And they're sort of fear-mongering and misusing children in support of their adult political objectives.
I'm glad to see you raise this issue, because I've raised it generically to say that I think that a lot of these marches that have happened around the country and continue to happen, I guess there's another one planned for a couple of weeks from now, are being done with the resources of public schools that all of us fund. You've filed a lawsuit, though, to go after the schools and ask for information about what they're doing and how they're doing it?
Well, technically, it's not a lawsuit. Oh. It's just a request under the Public Records Act. And then we'll just see what comes out of that.
So what are you looking for in particular? Is it emails?
Yeah, emails, the materials, how it was organized, who they worked with on the outside, things like that. I mean, we had parents come to us and tell us that there were outside people who came in and worked with the teachers to organize this and plan more of it. And they're very proud of what they're doing, because they're moving their political ball with taxpayer money, which we think is, patently illegal and unethical as well.
So you don't buy the line, and I don't buy it either, but you don't buy the line that they have, that all these kids just spontaneously in, third and fourth and fifth grade and in high school, they just all decided during passing time, during, while they're going from class to class or sitting around the lunch table, that they all just cooked this up on their own.
Well, we have an email from the superintendent back on March 6th directing each school to plan for a school-wide activity. So I'm sure there are many students who took some initiative on their own. Now, most of these are sort of high school students, and they've been exposed to years of brainwashing about guns. I mean, if you throw people out of school for having a T-shirt with a gun on it, and you sanction people if they cut out a piece of paper in the shape of a gun, you know, you have visibly inspired some massive amount of fear about guns out of proportion to what reality is. And so by the time students get to high school, they may not think they're brainwashed, but they already are.
Do you think that if you get this information that we might be able to actually course correct some of the schools, get them to knock this stuff off?
I don't know. I think that, you know, it's a question of raw political power, and the only thing that I think would stop them would be a court order. And there are state laws. There's a state law for ethical conduct of teachers that says you're not allowed to exploit professional relationships with any student in support of persons or issues. There are state laws against using state funds for political activity. The question is whether they're crafted broadly enough to address sort of general advocacy as opposed to advocacy for specific candidates or measures. And then there's sort of a whole line of constitutional cases that arose out of unions and bar associations and universities where the courts have said, look, you know, if you've got to pay these dues or fees or whatever it is, they can't be taking your fees and using them for political speech you detest because it's a violation of your First Amendment rights. And I think that's what's going on here.
I'm talking to James Buechel, who's the head of the Multnomah County Republican Party. He's also an attorney, and I'm not. So let me ask you a legal question. I know that when it comes to spending money, the union cases are particularly on point. Could you make the case that if by law most children are compelled to attend public schools? Now, we know you have an option to put your kids in a private school or put your kids in homeschooling. But other than that, if you don't do those other steps, which are typically more, either take more energy and effort by the parent or take more money in the case of a private school, that you're compelled by law to put your kids in that situation. Can you make the case that even if no kid got paid for doing this, that when you take that captive group of students and you say to them, we're going to have you go out and publicly advocate for a particular point of view, that this is the government forcing free speech and forcing it on a particularly vulnerable or susceptible group of people? These are not adults, they're children. And they, I'm sure, give a lot of deference to their teachers and the school principals and all. So you have a group that's not just vulnerable to suggestion, but also under the control of adults who, in many cases, for all the right reasons, they admire and they respect. And then, but they are government employees who then tell the children this, you know, this, or guide them in, this is the thing you're going to say. These are the kind of signs you're going to put up. This is the time of day you're going to go out and march, and we'll let the media know you're going to be there. In other words, this is a government agency, which is what schools are. People sometimes forget that, that is now pushing young citizens who are not passing age of majority to go out and voice a particular point of view. That would seem to violate that same thing, even if there was no money directly involved in it.
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head, and I think what's mandatory is paying the local taxes, and I think there's a lot of money involved in it, because the feedback that we got from the parents is that this thing destroyed an entire day of education. You know, after the kids came out, teachers would say stuff like, "It's oh, well, this is too important for us to do our regular work." And then they sat around at Franklin High School in at least one class and watched Kung Fu Panda 2 because everybody was too revved up to work. And in a context where, you know, Oregon schools are running out of money and they have, you know, one of the fewest number of days of school in the country and terrible graduation rates, to sort of dedicate entire days of school to this kind of stuff is a total waste of money.
If you're successful in getting this public records request fulfilled, and believe me, I go after them too, and I realize just how hard they can fight to avoid giving the public records that by law are their right, do you go on to a lawsuit perhaps that challenges this kind of activity, this kind of influence over children in court on First Amendment ground?
I think that depends on what the evidence shows. And so we're out trying to raise funds right now to pay what I think will be some very exorbitant fees that the school system demands. So if anybody has money and wants to know what's going on in the school, send it to the Multnomah County Republican Party and we'll use it for the Public Records Act request.
Well, I'm in favor of that, but can I make one suggestion, James?
Sure.
Way back when I was just a reporter and kept my opinion out of things, I got frustrated because agencies would say, sure, you can have those public records, but that'll be $10,000. You know, I didn't have that money, and neither did the radio and TV stations I worked for, so I persuaded a lawmaker to introduce a bill that actually passed, and they added to the law, and they allowed a fee waiver. And the fee waiver is not just for journalists. It's for any citizen who's seeking a public record where the agency says that'll be $10,000 or $100,000 or whatever, that you can apply for a fee waiver and say the criteria you have to meet, and I know you know how to write this argument, the criteria is because releasing the information would benefit the general public. So if an insurance company says we need it for business purposes, they don't get a waiver. But if you go in and say, my little interest group would like this information because the public needs to know X, Y, or Z, that they can grant you a waiver. And you say, what happens when they get turned down? When you get turned down, you get to appeal that one to the, in the case of a state agency, to the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum, who I don't think is very favorably disposed toward this, but so what? Or in the case of a local agency, a school, you could appeal to the local district attorney, and he has a timeline that he has to hit to respond to your request for a fee waiver. And I've actually had a few of them work where they've ordered the agency, you will provide this for either a minimal cost or no cost whatsoever. What do you think of that?
We anticipate doing that. What we anticipate that it will do is trim off some percentage of the fee, but they'll still be demanding thousands of dollars after that. And then if one chooses to fight about the charge, the answer will be, look, we're reasonable. We took 40% off the top or whatever, but, you know, it cost us a lot of money to do this and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, there's not enough money for education and blah, 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 blah. And so I don't think we can get the cost down to zero.
Okay. So if people want to send the Multnomah County GOP some money for this cause, how do they do it?
That's a good question. They just they go to the website, multnomahgop.org, and contribute it, or they put it in an envelope and send it in. The address is on the website, multnomahgop.org.
I'm glad you're doing this. I wish every other county GOP around Oregon and Washington were doing it, and I wish the state GOPs were doing this as well.
Well, thank you.
James, thanks very much for the time.
No problem.
Back in just a moment. I want to see that information out. Do you think your kids should be brainwashed while they're sitting in school? They're a captive audience. They're required by law to be there. And then the schools use them for political purposes to push a particular message. Is that something you think that your school should be doing with your kids? We'll be back in a moment. Your calls are welcome. 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And while I really like the efforts of Oregon Secretary of State Dennis Richardson, I can't disagree with him more about one of his latest adventures, and that is he went out to Umatilla County. I like the folks in Umatilla County. He went to Pendleton. He visited the Elections Division in Umatilla County. And he said that he's visiting all 36 counties to get a better understanding of how they process the ballots and all that stuff. However, he says that he is disappointed by the election turnout. There were times where Umatilla County used to turn out 80% of its voters. Today, the rate is around 30%. And is routinely last in the state. He says, I feel very strongly that as citizens, we have an obligation to participate in the system. That's not the case. You have a right to participate in it. There is no obligation to vote. Now, if people ask me, hey, Lars, there's an election coming up. Do you think I ought to vote? I say, yeah, you ought to vote. The fact that you're thinking about it alone makes it something that you ought to do. But it has to be your decision. In this case, Dennis Richardson says that his office is going to help out and offered the possibility of robocalling to encourage voting. He even said that local billboard companies might be willing to offer vacant space to get out the vote. Should we encourage people to vote who have so little interest in voting that they don't even bother when you are automatically registered to vote if you have a driver's license or an ID number, and that describes almost every adult in both Oregon and Washington? And you are, if you're registered, you're automatically sent a ballot. So a ballot comes to your home. It doesn't get much easier. You can either put a stamp on it and vote your preference, or you can vote your preference and then take the ballot with you and drop it off on your way on some other errand. When we've made voting that easy, and there are still 70% of the people in some elections who don't turn out, do you really want to encourage people who have so little interest that even when you hand deliver a ballot to their home, they still don't show any real interest in voting? I think the answer to that would be no. Let's go to Robert in Lebanon. Hey, Robert, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
How you doing today, Lars?
Quite well. Thanks for asking.
wanted to give you my insight on placing the troops down on the border. As a veteran myself, I just wanted to let you know you are correct in the fact that the reserves and the Army are controlled by the federal government, and the National Guard is controlled by the state.
Thank you. And thanks for your service, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Any one of the reserve or the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, they all do training before they're ever deployed.
Mm-hmm.
Urban and desert training. And giving them a 30-day deployment down to the border, be it, you know, up in the air, Navy out in the seas, the Gulf, Pacific Ocean, the Marine Corps, the Army on the ground. What better training can you get? And, you know, they're all getting paid to be there, you know, and it would provide security for the government, security for the citizens, and also train them if we ever got to get deployed back overseas again.
I think it's a terrific idea, and it also sends a real strong message to Mexico that we take this seriously. Mexico has not taken the American border seriously. Its government frequently equips illegal aliens or soon-to-be illegal aliens with little pamphlets that tell them how to get across the border safely, what to do once they get to the United States. The fact is, Mexico knows that we have run an open border down there, and we've ignored the problem. We now have a president who says, I'm not going to ignore the problem anymore. When you put troops on that border, it sends a message. And if the president of Mexico is unclear about that, he can get on the horn and call up Donald Trump and say, what you doing down there with all those troops? And he can say, I'm not letting your folks in anymore unless they come in legally. I mean, if he's confused at all about what's going on there. And I think it sends a terrific message.
Before we deployed to Iraq, we dropped pamphlets over there letting them know we're coming and the opportunity to lay down their weapons and surrender. You know, if the Mexican government wants to send out pamphlets, maybe we should drop our own.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't come across our border because we got tanks and helicopters here. And these may be the consequences if you decide to try.
I think that's a great idea. Get the government printing office to do something other than printing tax forms and print up some four-color brochures that show Humvees and armored personnel carriers and men and women with guns in uniform and say, this is what you're going to be greeted by if you try to cross our border illegally. Don't even try. By the way, it's World Health Week. Your donations are saving lives today by helping to cure children of parasites and disease. These parasites are nasty. They cause little kids to have bloated bellies. They suffer through incredible pain, and it can be cured with a 44-cent pill. How would you like to buy some of those? A $44 donation. 100 kids are cured by that. Call 888-544-5448. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. This Friday, we'll be celebrating First Amendment Friday live from Northwest Armory. We'll be doing both shows live there, and we'll be glad to have you come by and say hello in person. And we're doing some other traveling. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be down on the campus of Stanford University at the Hoover Institution. We get a chance to go down about once a year and visit with some of the smartest people on the planet, including folks like Victor Davis Hanson. And it's a real pleasure to be with you today, live on the Radio Northwest Network. I love this story coming out of Eastern Washington. An Eastern Washington congressional candidate is inviting voters to a Shooting with the Candidate campaign event. Krem TV, that's in Spokane, reports that Republican Jared Gavin Bonneau plans to host the event in April after announcing last month with a tweet saying, we will be having some good old American fun, shooting, talking of freedom, and getting to know each other. He also used the hashtags linking with the National Rifle Association and Make America Great Again, President Donald Trump's rallying cry. Bonneau says that he was, and I may be saying his name wrong, but it's French, so I don't know. Bonneau says he was inspired to host the shooting event because he enjoys shooting, and he thought, what a great way to have a blast and meet people. The 31-year-old from Spokane is running against incumbent Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers. She was just on the show last week, in the Republican primary for Washington's 5th District seat. He's trying to primary Kathy McMorris Rogers. I like competition when it happens. And if you can't stand up to competition, then you don't deserve to be in the office. Anyway, glad to have you with me. If you want to jump into the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll today, should we encourage people to vote who've shown no interest in voting? The Oregon Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson, says that he wants to encourage people to vote. He wants to get robocalls going. He wants billboards. And you might think, Lars, you're going to love that idea. I don't love the idea. Oregon and Washington, much to my displeasure, years ago decided to have vote by mail. They said, we have to make it easier for people to vote. Well, even with a ballot delivered automatically to your home, even with voter registration, which is automatic, another idea I'm not crazy about, even with all that, in some parts of the Northwest, there are election precincts that only show 30% turnout. In other words, even when you make it as easy as possible, there are a lot of people who choose not to vote. They have no interest. Now, I think in some ways, you almost make voting seem more special if you have to exert some effort. In this case, voting for both Oregon and Washington under vote by mail merely means taking the envelope out of the mailbox, opening it, marking it, putting a stamp on it, and dropping it back in the mailbox. It takes virtually no effort whatsoever. If under those circumstances, folks still decide that they're not interested in voting to the tune of 70% of them, should we encourage those people who have so little interest in voting in actually doing it? I think the answer is no, and I would vote no in the Twitter poll. Yesterday in the Twitter poll, we asked you this: should cities hamstring Uber and Lyft to help keep the cab companies alive? That's what Seattle is talking about doing right now. They want to add on additional fees so that Uber is more expensive and cab company fares stay the same. In other words, the government is putting its thumb on the scale and picking winners and picking losers. The answer on that, should we hamstring Uber and Lyft to keep the cab companies alive? 89% of you joined me in voting no. Only 11% of you thought that was a great idea. So find the Twitter poll online at LarsLarson.com or at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And while you're on the website, check out the military challenge coins. I love them. I love getting them. And I love having one to give back. It's the Lars Larson Show challenge coin. You find it at LarsLarson.com. To your calls now. Let's go to Dean, first of all. Hey, Dean, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars. I need to chastise you for something you said last week on Petition 43.
Initiative Petition 43, for everybody listening, is the one that would confiscate some people's guns, both pistols and rifles, and do it by the hundreds of thousands if passed by Oregon voters, if it makes the ballot. What did I get wrong?
What you got wrong is God's law. God said to the people, sell your garments and purchase a sword.
Jesus said it, yeah.
Yes.
But what did I get wrong?
What you got wrong is you mentioned federal government, state government, but not God's law.
Well, let me tell you something, Dean. The United States of America is not a theocracy, nor do I want it to be a theocracy. And in that, I agree with the founders of the country, who also did not seek to make a theocratic government. They sought to make a government of man's law. And since you're knowledgeable about the Bible, I would imagine you know what Jesus had to say about man's law. Do you remember the phrase?
Yes.
What was it?
You got me.
Render unto Caesar. Render
unto Caesar.
Now, he was talking specifically about taxes, but what he meant in general was there are man's laws and there are God's laws. And that when it comes to man's laws, that's Caesar's law in the day. These days, it's somewhat Obama's law, and more often now, laws passed by the Congress or signed by President Trump, that God believed that we should follow man's laws where man's laws apply and follow God's law where those laws apply. Do God's laws apply in the courts of the United States?
I believe they do.
I don't believe they do. And I'll tell you why. When a judge makes a decision, he does not base it on Christian theology. He doesn't base it on Islam. He doesn't base it on Judaism. And he doesn't base it on atheism. And all of those, both not believing in God and believing in God in different ways, are not only allowed under the United States Constitution, they are protected under the Constitution, and they are the ability to believe in whatever belief you choose or no belief at all is, again, something you got from God, but it's protected by the U.S. Constitution. So would you want a judge sitting on a bench in any community in America to make decisions based on theocratic law or based on man's laws?
Our law system is based on Judeo-Christian.
It has some elements in there, but it has some differences as well. For example, God's laws, Ten Commandments, you're not supposed to covet, right?
Yeah.
Do you find one of man's laws that covers that?
I'm trying to.
I think the answer to that is no. There's no law out there that says I can walk down the street, and if somebody's driving a nice looking pickup truck, I can say, that is a nice pickup truck. I'd like to have a pickup truck. I can covet somebody else's pickup truck, and that's okay. But God says I shouldn't be covering. So there's a difference between man's laws and God's laws, right? And part of God's laws actually come into conflict with the U.S. Constitution. Think about this. You know, since you're a Christian, I can tell from what you're saying you're a Christian. God said, listen, you should follow God and no other gods, right?
Right.
How would that work under the U.S. Constitution that says I don't have to follow any religion or I can follow whatever religion I choose? I have that God-given right to follow any religion I choose. Christianity does not give you that latitude, does it?
Not really.
Not at all. You know, and that's okay. If you're a Christian, you choose to be a Christian, you could say, don't bring any other gods in front of me. You know, Moses got the message big time, and so did his followers. Anyway, back in just a moment. Oh, before I go, talking about doing God's work on earth, it's World Health Week. Your donations are saving lives today by helping cure children of parasites and disease. I've never been to some of these countries where these parasites that get into the drinking water, little kids get them, their bellies blowed up, they suffer incredible pain, and it costs 44 cents to cure it. So World Concern would like $44 to save and cure 100 kids. If you can help out, I'm glad to help out. Tina and I are, I should say. 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. I'm just so glad to see what the president is doing. That he's sending those troops to the border. And he says immediately. Now, I would like to know, actually, from some of the National Guard folks out there, when they say immediately, what's the minimum time that it takes to get a guard unit geared up and have them assemble their gear and then get ready to deploy to a place within the United States? I'm guessing it's at least a couple of weeks. But maybe they've done a little bit of work at the front end of this. Maybe they got the Texas Guard ready to go right out there on the border by McAllen, Texas, or something. Who knows? We might even be able to take the show on the road and go down to the border. Wouldn't that be great? Do a live broadcast day or two at the border. We're going to be broadcasting live from Northwest Armory this Friday. If you get a chance to come on by and say hello, we'd love to have you do that for First Amendment Friday. And then next week back in studio, the week after that, we'll be heading down to the Hoover Institution at Stanford. Let's go to Rick and Eugene. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Well, Lars, I appreciate you guys doing that charity for the $44 and everything, the intestinal parasites. I was deployed to Somalia, Africa during the Black Hawk Down and everything, and one person made a pot of coffee. And that coffee, I drank one cup, but I went through 5 months of pure misery. Anything that went in, went out of your body.
Oh, boy.
And that's because of those parasites.
And now,
I got medevac.
They weren't able to cure it in your case and give you the same medicine they give these kids?
No, they tried everything, but they finally got it, Lars. But they, you know, that was back in 93. But I think this is a wonderful cause and everything. And I tell you what, it's a miserable experience to go through, but it's I already gave today.
Well, I appreciate your contribution today, and I also appreciate your service to America. You know, Rick, sometimes, yes. I mean, I wake up every day and I think I'm blessed to live in this country. But I think sometimes it escapes people. They're saying, oh, I'm not happy with this, I'm not happy with that. Do you realize that one of the luxuries that we don't even notice in this country, if you're the poorest person in America, you know, you are, you just don't have any money at all. You don't have, you're on food stamps or welfare. You're barely scraping out a living. At least you know you can open up any tap. You go to any tap, open it up, and the water you drink is absolutely safe. Whereas these little kids are drinking out of, you know, really their sewers. And the water is dirty and it contains all these microbiological agents. And so you want to get
terrible.
I mean, for 44 cents to be able to cure that is a terrific thing for them to do. Rick, thanks a lot, and I appreciate your service to America. Let's go to Mike in Medford. Hey, Mike, you're in the National Guard. Is that right?
Hello?
Hello, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. No, I'm not in the National Guard.
Oh.
I have an anecdote that shows how effective the military can be at dealing with illegal aliens.
Okay.
January 1965, the decision to go to war had been made. We were preparing, and we were doing a dress rehearsal at Camp Pendleton, amphibious landing. I was fortunate enough to go over the night before with the Beachmasters to prepare the landing zone. At 4 o'clock in the morning, the carrier, the cruisers and destroyers opened up, started shelling the beach. And when the sun came up, the F-4s came in and were bombing the beach, and the Marines were coming ashore. And I looked over my shoulder, and behind a sand dune, somebody's waving a white flag. And we're going, what is that? So we went over, and there's a couple of dozen Mexicans that had snuck into the country, and were in the wrong place at the wrong time. So we called in a couple of trucks to take them down to San Ysidro and point them south. And I am told they were very happy to go back to Mexico.
But they were ready to surrender to you in, during these training exercises.
Oh, boy, howdy.
Boy,
it was hilarious.
See, that's what everybody yesterday, after the president made that announcement, I got a bunch of phone calls and emails from people saying, so what are you saying? They're going to go down and shoot these people? I said, no. I said, put yourself in the shoes of an illegal alien. You're coming north. And as soon as you top one of the ridges, you look down and there's a whole bunch of Humvees and U.S. military personnel and an established camp or, trucks going up and down the roads. And you think, this is not the direction we need to go. And you find out
I think I'll go back wherever I came from.
I think it might be a good way to turn them around. Mike, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to John in Bellingham. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, Lars. I want to talk to you about your challenge coin. When I was in the military, I only ever saw one from the Green Berets.
Yeah.
But in Desert Storm, we had every unit had their own death cards. Have you ever seen those?
A death card?
Yeah.
No,
I haven't.
You
leave it behind on the bodies to let them know who killed them.
Is that right? So what did a death card say? Did it say something in Arabic or whatever?
No, it was all in English. I still have mine. Says on one side, when you care enough to send the very best, and the other side, it's the unit and everything.
And
it was just let the enemy know who did it.
Sounds like a good way to send a message, doesn't it?
Well, in Vietnam, my father used to send them out helicopter windows with a Cobra on it for the Cobra helicopters. And they knew who destroyed them. But I was wondering if I could get a mailing address for your radio station from your man. I could send you a set.
I'd love to see one. We'll get that for you off the air in just a second, and I appreciate that. Thanks very much for your service, too. Let me go quickly to Jared in Battleground. Jared, we're close to the break. What's on your mind? Hey, Jared.
Jared or Gary?
Gary. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Lars, there's when Trump decided to send the military down to the border.
Yeah.
First it was the military, now it's the National Guard.
Well, the National Guard is part of the military.
Yeah, but I realize that. I'm ex-military myself, too.
Thank you.
But it seems to me like they could quickly send the active military down there quicker than getting that, just like you talked about previously. How long is it going to take to get them down there? And that's why I thought...
I don't have a problem with that. We've had 30 years of this going on. I think we could wait a couple of weeks, but I have no problem with putting the active military down there. They're already on the payroll, and it'd be good training for them as well. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. And a lot of times on this show, I talk about the Constitution because we are one of the only countries on planet Earth that actually recognizes natural rights that are enjoyed by our citizens. Some people come out of public schools brainwashed and thinking these rights come from the government, but they do not come from the government. They come because of God. And Mike is on the line from Boardman with a question on that. Mike, thanks for listening on KUMA. Welcome to the program, and what's on your mind?
Yeah, that's my question, is what we're talking about. When we talk about, like, the Second Amendment, we have the God-given right to bear and keep arms.
Yeah.
Now, since we're not a theocracy,
yeah,
where does that God part come in?
Well, let me tell you where it comes in. The folks who founded this country, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, who fought the war for independence, and then wrote the Constitution, a job that took 8 years... they thought long and hard about this. This wasn't something scratched out on a cocktail napkin in the Tun Tavern in Pennsylvania. This was something they had to think about. And I think that there was a lot of debate about, well, what do we do with regard to a Bill of Rights? Do we create a Bill of Rights? And there were some who were against it and some were in favor of it. But the idea was that if you said our rights come from man in any way, shape, or form, right, that we as a government have granted you the right to be free from search and seizure, or the right to practice your own religion, or the right to engage in free speech or freedom of the press, the right to keep and bear arms, that if those rights come from man, they can be taken away by man. So the Constitution of this country says you have these rights because you were created by your creator and you enjoy the rights simply because you exist. And the government has then adopted a constitution, the people have adopted a constitution that says, and the government will not tread on those rights. In fact, it's the government's job to protect those rights. And that's one of the jobs we've assigned to the federal government, not to give us rights, but to make sure that nobody else takes them away in a way that violates our constitutional rights. Any other interpretation would have rights that are granted, like the Cuban Constitution grants people rights, but it's a grant by the government, and that means the government can take it away. And there are a lot of other countries where you don't even have a constitution to speak of, which means you don't enjoy any rights at all. You get whatever the current government decides to allow you to do. So if you're allowed to own property, they can take it away tomorrow. If the government decides to take life, liberty, or property from an American citizen, the government has to give you due process and, in many cases, compensation. Do you see why it's so important that those rights do not come from a piece of paper or from a government made up of men, but they come instead as a natural consequence of simply being born in God's image?
I understand, but I just hear a lot, and I mean, I agree with the Second Amendment. I agree with the Constitution wholeheartedly. I think a lot of people misunderstand and saying, well, it's my God-given right. Well, God gave me the right. Well, you know, if you can show me some place in the Bible where it says that God gave you the right to bear and keep arms, I mean, I'd be really surprised.
Well, I can. If you're interested, you asked, I'm glad to tell you that God and his son, Jesus Christ, believed that you had a right to protect your own life. And in fact, I'm glad to give to anybody. I spent a lot of time on this a few years ago. I looked up a lot of scripture. I looked up a lot of history, and I sat down and wrote something because somebody had once challenged me. He said, Jesus Christ would not have carried a gun, and you're doing an unchristian thing by carrying a gun and encouraging other people to do it. And I said, of course he would have. They didn't have guns in those days, but he actually told his disciples, we're going out into dangerous places, and you need to carry a sword. And even if you have to sell your cloak, it would be the equivalent of telling somebody who's of modest means, even if you have to sell the coat off your back, buy a gun, buy the mechanism, the tool that you can use to protect yourself, because we're facing dangerous times. So Christ himself talked about the need to be able to protect you. And, you know, since life is so precious, especially in the view of Christians, not so much with Muslims, life's pretty throwaway in a lot of Muslim countries, if you haven't noticed, the Christians view life as absolutely precious. Well, how can you have life that is given to you as a gift from God and then say, but if somebody comes and decides to kill me or hurt me badly, I can't do anything to protect myself? And that's why there's a whole bunch of scripture that backs up that idea. And if anybody's curious, I'll be glad to send them my little cheat sheet on that subject, on Jesus and the right to self-defense. And of course, he was speaking for God. So do you think that the Bible does not reference the ability of you to protect yourself?
It does, but it also gives reference to if you're struck on your right cheek, turn your left cheek.
But if you read the history on that, it is, we're talking about something entirely different. Here's, in case anybody's missing the quote, it's Luke 22:36. But now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. What do you think Christ was saying when he told his disciples, you've got to have one of these, even if you have to sell your coat to get one?
I understand, Lord. I understand what you're saying. I do. And I agree that we should be able to protect ourselves and everything else. I mean, I do that.
For example, I'll give you another one. Okay. Because I'm not just trying to say there's one little verse and I'll hang my hat on all of it. And I'm not enough of a theologian to talk about the Bible that knowledgeably, but I'm an average Christian. I've read the book, but he says, but know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Now, what do you think that suggests? Do you think that was saying, stay up late at night when the burglar comes, try and talk him out of burglaring your house? He was talking about protecting yourself and your house.
Yeah. Well, no, he's not in that, Lars. To be honest with you, what he's talking about is what the time that Christ will come, when salvation will come.
I don't believe you're right.
It's a parable, and it's what the parable means is that you must be prepared for all things at all times. Yes, it is.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you respectfully about that, but the fact is that I think there's plenty of backup to the idea. And let me ask you, you're an American citizen, right?
That's correct.
Okay, I mean, because there's a lot of non-citizens out by Boardman, too.
No, I'm a citizen, and I hold plenty of arms, and I didn't ask you.
I'm not, no, don't anticipate my question. You don't know where I'm going. Do you think you have rights?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, you already know where I think they come from. Where do you think they come from?
I think they come from the Constitution, from the men that wrote the Constitution.
So you believe that if these kids who are out marching in the streets right now and have been and I guess are planning another one a couple of weeks from now, that if they persuade the Congress to amend the Constitution and take away your right to keep and bear, that's a man-given right that can be taken away by the action of men. You believe that?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Well,
I don't agree with it by any means.
Well, what makes you reject the idea that you have these rights as a natural consequence of being born a human being in the image of God? What makes you think you didn't get these rights from God?
Because we're a theocracy then.
No, we're not a theocracy. We can believe.
Yeah, we're saying that God plays a role in our government.
Yeah, well, and see, God does play a role, but that doesn't make us a theocracy necessarily, because the Constitution also says that you don't have to believe in any faith at all. You can be an atheist, which is a little goofy, but okay, there are people who are atheists, and now I probably made the atheists mad. They'll start calling, and they usually call in great numbers, and that's okay, because I'm happy to talk to them. Because they think they're following a religion and they just call it atheism. And as my friend Michael LeBron says, if not believing in God is a religion, then not collecting stamps is a hobby.
Okay.
But I can't believe, Mike, that you're a good, Second Amendment believing American citizen who believes that you don't have any rights unless Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer say you do.
I do have rights, but I'm not going to sit here and say that they're God-given.
Okay, that's fair. You have a right to your beliefs, as the Constitution says, and you have a right to phone calls as well, and I appreciate the phone call. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Dan in Gresham writes in about the conversation I just had from the gentleman from Boardman who does not believe that he has natural rights, that he believes that all of his rights come from Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Barack Obama. Lars, your caller was right about the parable of the man whose house is being robbed as a parable, but a parable is using an example of everyday commonly known events or practices to illustrate a larger point. So the guy defending his house was an automatic given for the fact of the time that everybody would have understood you protect your own house. By the way, it's World Health Week. Your donations are saving lives by curing children of parasites. This is such a, it's such a devastating thing to happen to a kid. That if you drink the ordinary water in your part of the world and you get these parasites, they will do tremendous damage to you and cause incredible pain, and we can cure it with a 44-cent pill. So, $44 cures 100 kids. If you'd like to make a donation to World Concern, it's a good thing to do. 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. Let's go to Tim in Springfield. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Well, I was just thinking about the guy from Boardman. I hope he's still listening. He talked about the Constitution, about where our rights came from. My understanding is that the first document you have to start with is the Declaration of Independence,
true,
which was way before. And that's where it states that our rights were given, were inalienable rights given to us, mm-hmm, and that they weren't from a government. They're from our Creator. And so if he starts there, the Constitution backs that up. The Bill of Rights backs that up. And our amendments back that up. So there's a little more he needs to know than just the Constitution.
Right. And I guess I find it an actually frightening idea that my rights might come from a piece of paper and a government that frequently does things that I thoroughly disagree with, and a government of fallible men and women. Because if my rights came from there, I'd just say, well, my mortgage is secure because it's issued by a bank, and I trust that they will meet their commitments.
Our founding fathers, I hear a lot of times that people think that our Constitution is outdated and stuff like that. And I ask people, what's behind our Constitution? And a lot of people can't say that. I think they're principles. So I don't believe our principles are outdated. And so I think that's where you kind of run into it. I think a lot of people would like to just wash all that stuff away.
Yeah, they'd like to, except that it has served this country so well, and frankly, there is no other constitution like it in the world. Great Britain has rights for citizens, but they don't have the full rights of free speech. They certainly don't have Second Amendment rights. They have limited Fourth Amendment protection. So even in a very comparable culture to ours, Brits do not begin to enjoy the protection of their rights that we have. And I can't. Can you think of a country on planet Earth where the rights are even equivalent to what we have?
I can't. But a real quick thing is, another thought I had is that our founding fathers realized that a government was going to be like an entity, that this thing, if you gave it the leads to run and grow, it would. And a lot of that stuff, they understood that human beings are fallible. And if you give them power, it's going to grow to a state where it's going to start taking from the citizens. And so that was, I believe, a lot of the thought behind it. And I can't think. I mean, there's a lot of great countries. I'm not bashing anybody, but I can't think anybody else that has a constitution or a individual right to liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Couldn't agree with you more. Tim, thank you. By the way, and I won't have the time to talk about it on the Northwest Show today because we're a couple of minutes from the top of the hour, but let me tell you something absolutely terrifying, although it's kind of expected. Governor Kate Brown, and I have a feeling that Governor Jay Inslee of Washington will do the same thing, probably not the governor of Idaho. Governor Kate Brown, from a verified Twitter account, has already tweeted out about 5 minutes ago, there has been no outreach by the president or federal officials, and I have no intention of allowing Oregon's guard troops to be used to distract from his troubles in Washington. She then goes on and says, if at real Donald Trump asks me to deploy Oregon guard troops to the Mexican border, I will say no. As the commander of the Oregon Guard, I am deeply troubled by Trump's plan to militarize our border. Now, do you know what's laughable about this? Kate Brown has been governor for a couple of years. She'd like to get another term. She doesn't seem to understand where her authority ends. She has no intention of sending Oregon Guard troops to the border. Do you think anybody has explained to Katie that she doesn't control those troops the minute they're federalized? And the only way for the president to send them to the border is to federalize them. Now, in practical terms, other than control, who controls the Guard troops? When you federalize them, about the only thing that changes is who pays the bill. If they are under state control, which they are until they're federalized, then the state of Oregon pays a lot of the bill, so does the federal government pay some of it. When they federalize those troops, the bill goes to the federal government. But that's the only thing that changes. But when it changes, the president has control. If he federalizes the Oregon National Guard, poor old Katie Brown, who thinks she's going to get another term in office, she's going to say, I'm not going to let them go. Well, Katie, as far as letting them go once they're federalized, you don't have any say-so in that. You're not authorized. You got the Lars Larson Show. What a joke.